This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Florence Price was the first African-American woman to have her symphony performed by a major orchestra. In 1933, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra featured her work after it won a competition. And so for any other composer, this would have launched a successful career. But her talents were overlooked because she was a black woman. Florence Price's music is having a renaissance in recent years, and two of her pieces are on an upcoming program for the Durham Symphony Orchestra. Maestro William Henry Curry joins me now to talk about her life and the music of Florence Price, as well as this weekend's concert. There is more on the program. William Henry Curry is the maestro music director for the Durham Symphony Orchestra, and he joins us now. Welcome back, Bill.
Good to have you. It's a pleasure to be here always, Frank. Thank you for having me.
Tell us about Florence Price. Who was she?
She grew up in Little Rock, Arkansas, a mixed-race family, was a child prodigy, organist, and pianist. She got a scholarship to go to the New England Conservatory in Boston, and before she went, her mother said, "You're not going to be accepted unless you try to pass." She had very light skin. So she passed as a Mexican, and she began to compose during this period and got a great degree, came back to Arkansas, and then really started to compose every day. She moved from Little Rock because of a lynching in her neighborhood, and she went to Chicago. And by this time, she'd already written a symphony. And as you said, this was played by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. She won a prize for it. And then it was so successfully received, she was invited back to play her own piano concerto with the orchestra. So this was obviously a keeper, something extraordinary. And so she did what you have to do as a composer. You have to be a good self-promoter. You have to get the word out about your stuff. So she sent out the letters and all that, and no responses. And finally she wrote one of my heroes. Serge Koussevitzky was the conductor of the Boston Symphony. He nurtured young American composing talent. He discovered Aaron Copland, Roy Harris, Leonard Bernstein. So she wrote him a letter, and there's a very poignant phrase in it that says, "I know my case is not going to be helped because I am African American." At that point, you say, well, is she going to give up? This is about 1942. And she did give up as far as trying to promote her music. Now, here's the extraordinary part. I might have stopped composing if I was hitting my head against the glass ceiling and nothing was happening except my head was hurting. She kept on writing four symphonies, four concertos, hundreds of songs, gorgeous choral music. She wrote a piece in 1953 for a piano, which we're going to play in an orchestration. When she died, the music, all these manuscripts went to her daughter. The daughter tried to promote her music, but this was in the late 50s where tonal, romantic, melodic American music was out. It was a kind of a McCarthy period of music. So the daughter tried, but when she died, people said, well, let's find the music. And they could not find the music anywhere. Then fast forward to about 2005, there's an old dilapidated house on the skirts of Chicago that's going to be torn down. And they're getting junk out of the house to be sent to the junkyard. And someone looks in the corner and they see eight huge boxes. What's in here? Eight boxes of her music that missed being destroyed by about 5 minutes. So some bright soul said, well, let's take a look at it. And they said, wait a minute. This is excellent music. So it's not just a miracle and a great story. The music is extremely wonderful. So from that point on, there was a trickle of recordings. And now every year, every American orchestra is going to be playing her music. And we are so proud to be part of this renaissance.
I'm going to play some of her music and talk about the style that she wrote in and the ways in which she composed. But I do want to ask a question, because she goes to the conservatory passing for white or for Mexican-American. Why didn't she continue to do that? Why did she, obviously she came out in this letter to at least one possible buyer.
I guess you can only fool people but so long.
Yeah. Well, it's thankfully the music was discovered and is back in the mix, and it's going to be on your program with the Durham Symphony Orchestra this weekend. Talk about, we're going to play a piece, a little snippet of Dance in the Canebrakes. And I just wonder, before we do that, if we can talk a little bit about her style and this idea of an American composer who really embraces the sound of America in her work.
Well, exactly. She embraces spirituals and gospel, jazz. Now, she doesn't quote from these things directly, but it's definitely informed and nurtured by all these styles. So her music does sound American.
Let's have a little bit of a listen to Dances in the Canebrakes. Just a clip of Florence Price's Dances in the Canebrakes. You can hear this performed live Saturday, November 3rd at the Carolina Theater in Durham, part of the Durham Symphony Orchestra's celebration of the centennial of American women's suffrage. I'm talking about that program now to the orchestra's music director, Maestro William Henry Curry.
And Frank, before we go on, I think you said Saturday. It is Sunday.
Sunday. Ooh, okay. Well, it does say that right here, and It will be correct on our website.
Okay, thank you.
Sunday, November 3rd at the Carolina Theater in Durham.
Thank you.
Yeah. So talk about that, because it's interesting, too, to think about, I mean, where does she fit now that she's back in the canon? Where does she fit in terms of American composers?
Well, quality will out eventually, and now that we know she was a first-rate composer, and this is a great era for women composers. You know, I have been teaching film courses sponsored by Duke, and in my process of doing the research, I found all these great women screenwriters and book writers that are lost to history. And I began doing research on mainly American female composers a couple years ago, and I'm seeing that, you know, the good old boy network froze them out. And now we're in a different era now of sensitivity, thoughtfulness. And so I'll be promoting Florence Price's music because audiences love it. It is audience friendly, it's cuddly, and it has great melodies. Even when you played this little piece, which is reminiscent of cakewalk music and Scott Joplin ragtime, I can't help but moving to it.
Well, talk a little bit about that style of music, too, because it's interesting to think about American composers who, unlike their European brethren and sisterin, were not so interested in capturing the sound of America, right? I mean, they were looking at what the Europeans were doing. All the while in this movement of this nationalist movement in Europe, they're trying to go back to their roots, right?
So true. I mean, if you wanted to make it as a composer or conductor, you had to go to Europe. Mm-hmm. Be received well there and then come back here. Now, you know the famous story about Antonin Dvorak, who was in New York, had been a Czech nationalist composer, used those folk songs. And so he said to American composers, you're doing the same thing here, right, with your American folk music. And they all said, well, that's dirty music, Negro spirituals, Indian music. And he said, and he said this often, it's just not a myth. I am going to write a symphony that can prove that your American folk music is just as any good folk music in the world and can be the basis of a new period of symphonic composition. He said this in many interviews, just not once, you know, in passing. Yeah. And that symphony, of course, was the most famous symphony he ever wrote, the New World Symphony, which shows just that. Now, change happens very slowly. But over the next 30 years, you do see people like Aaron Copland and Florence Price using this as the basis for their music.
Let's talk about some of the other women that are going to be featured in your program on Sunday. Talk about one of those composers, Peggy Stewart Coolidge.
More unknown even than Florence Price. She was born in Massachusetts in 1913 and had a stellar career as a composer of women orchestras, and as a conductor-composer. And then some people heard about her music in Russia, a very famous composer, Aram Khachaturian, that promoted her. And she was the first American composer to have a concert dedicated to her music in Russia. In fact, she's better known today in Russia than over here. She wrote a film score for a David Niven movie, but again, she labored in obscurity, and after her death, some of these pieces started to be recorded, and I'm making it my personal mission to see, hey, maybe this is another Florence Price, because the piece we're doing, I've been in love with for 20 years. It's called Pioneer Dances, and as someone in our orchestra said, it sounds like hoedown music. It's that Americanish.
Let's listen to a little bit of that right here. Just a little bit of composer Peggy Stewart Coolidge's piece, Pioneer Dances, part of the weekend program for the Durham Symphony Orchestra Sunday at the Carolina Theater in Durham. Talking about it now with Maestro William Henry Curry, who is the music director of the Durham Symphony. And this weekend's program also features soprano Jamisa Yarborough.
Yes, you know, we've been doing a young instrumentalist competition for many years. It's part of our mission to nurture young talent. So I said, well, let's have an award for a young vocalist. So I went around to the various colleges and universities, and finally I heard a young soprano that had been nurtured by Susan Dunn, who's at Duke University, the vocal department. And the audition, as it were, was in Baldwin Auditorium, and the walls were shaking when she was singing. I hadn't heard a voice like that in a very long time, maybe since I'd heard Jesse Norman, the late Jesse Wow. Norman, some, you know, 35 years ago. So I said, well, this is our winner. And then one of my good friends in the area is Stephen Pristowsky. He's on the board of the Metropolitan Opera and was head for a while of the NC Opera. And he very generously donated to us a $2,000 award for her, which also came with a performance with the Durham Symphony.
Well, let's hear a little bit of her singing right now, a little bit of Puccini's work, and we're listening to Jamisa Yarborough. Soprano Jamisa Yarborough singing a bit of Puccini. Forgive my ignorance. What is that piece?
It's from Turandot, Act 3, Aria, Liu, who's sacrificing her life for her lover.
Well, you can hear more of that performance live, in fact, and the entire piece this weekend is part of the Durham Symphony Orchestra's program on Sunday, 4 o'clock, Carolina Theater in Durham. Of course, we've got all that information at our website, stateofthings.org. This means that with young talent like that still among us, that this is still very popular music. People are still engaging with this music and performing it.
Yes, very much. And of course, we with the Durham Symphony try to do the best American music, the best European music. It's a wonderful mix. We've championed Billy Strayhorn and Duke Ellington and John Coltrane. So we're very proud of our musical heritage with the Durham Symphony.
Tell us more about this, because we talked about it briefly, but maybe you can tell us more. The program is a celebration of the centennial of American women's suffrage, but it does include classical pieces as well.
Yes. Obviously, a program like this would have to include American with female composers. So we have three pieces altogether. And because we so rarely are in the Carolina Theater, I thought it important to include a huge, epic masterpiece, in this case, the Symphony No. 4 by Johannes Brahms, who is in a sense connected to the theme of this program because he was nurtured by Clara Schumann. Without Clara Schumann, there is no Brahms going into the world with confidence and she was a wonderful critic of his music. So kudos to her. There's, as you know from your reading, there's very often a very strong woman, a wife or a mother, behind a man of achievement.
Well, you could have had some of Fanny Mendelssohn's music in there as
Gosh, and Clara Schumann's
and Clara
music.
Schumann. Yeah, as well. Well, it is, and I think to celebrate this, and what does it do for women who, as you say, the old boys network pretty much kept them shut out and pushed to the sidelines? Now that we're daylighting this music, hopefully this brings more, and obviously more women have been involved since then, but this can't help but bring in even more.
It has to. You know, when I was growing up, I'm African-American, and we're talking about the early 60s, there were literally no male black role models in classical music. There were some sopranos, notably Leontine Price, but my hero I found on a record jacket was William Warfield, famous showboat and Porgy and Bess singer. So, yes, we all need role models that look like us. I don't think that's so crazy. And so now we're seeing an era where women conductors are doing well. I remember playing under a woman conductor when I was like 17. It was a conductor's camp workshop. And as she walked to the podium, I could hear the men hiss. Then she started conducting Wagner's Tannhäuser. I mean, it's like an epic moment to me, light bulb over the head. By the time we had gotten to the bottom of page one, everyone was thinking the same thing. Send the men conductors home and let her conduct.
Maestro William Henry Curry, the music director of the Durham Symphony Orchestra. Bill, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for helping us get out the word, Frank.
On Sunday, the Durham Symphony Orchestra is performing at 4 o'clock at the Carolina Theater in Durham. It's a ticketed event. You can find out more about the performance at our website, stateofthings.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter, Movies on the Radio, coming up. We're going to talk about films about conspiracies and cover-ups. You know, the parallax views. Suddenly, all kinds of films come to mind, and you can be part of the show. Send us an email at sot@wnc.org. You can also tweet at us at #SOTMovie. State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Grant Hull of Mormon. Robin Copley is our technical director. Josie Taras is our intern. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.